This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
Guys, as a former English teacher, I was fascinated with a study recently that appeared in one of the educational journals. And this study was conducted in the spring of 2008 in a very large school district in suburban America. And the setup was really simple. 73 English teachers were given the same student paper and asked to evaluate it. And the researcher got this paper from a former student. It was a persuasive paper. And these English teachers were asked to score this paper on a 1 to 100 point scale. So 100 obviously being perfect. Here's the amazing thing. Of these 73 English teachers in this same school district, the point range was 46 points. So the top grade of this paper was 96. The bottom grade was 50. I don't know if you get this, but that was from A to F. Okay, that's how this paper was evaluated. Now, the researcher came to, you know, like all researchers, they come to obvious conclusions. Oh, English teachers have a lot of different ways of evaluating things, and the same piece of work can be evaluated quite differently. Guys, this should not surprise us because you expose 73 people to anything, a painting, a car, an idea, a shrimp dinner, you're going to get a lot of different evaluations about that thing because quality is always assessed pretty subjectively. The reason that I mention this study is because in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, what Paul begins to talk about is how to assess ministry, how to assess what you do for God, how to assess the service that you give to God. And in fact, he begins by telling him something pretty important. Look what he says in verse 1. You know, brothers, that our visit to you was not a failure. Now, not a failure means, of course, that it was a success. The word failure here is a Greek word that literally means empty. It means inconsequential. So failure is a good translation. And what Paul is saying here is, listen, guys, I was not a failure. I was a success. He's defending himself, but in defending himself, he's giving us a list of ways to evaluate ministry from God's perspective. This whole passage details with how to look at your ministry and say, is this a success from God's view? Look at your service. Look at what you do to serve God and say, is this successful in God's eyes? And guys, we have so many different ideas about ministry. You line 73 Christians up to evaluate some aspect of service, you'd probably have a lot of different evaluations. Not only that, guys, isn't it true that all of you who are serving God in some way, big or small, doesn't matter, Satan often whispers in your ear, you know what you're doing? It's like a neon sign, failure. F-A-I-L-U-R-E. Bam, bam, failure, failure, failure. You get that neon sign going in your brain all the time. Like, oh, look, there's not very many people who are responding to you, or there's not whatever. And so we if we don't watch it, we're having this very subjective view of what we're doing in ministry or how we're serving, and it leads to a lot of discouragement. Listen, Paul has a list, and guess what? If Paul has a list, God's got a list. Let's look at God's list in terms of what it means to be successful in ministry. What are the marks of success that he cares about? That's what we're going to be talking about today. And we're just going to begin right in. First of all, what God cares about, being tenacious in ministry, being tenacious in what you're doing. I use that word tenacious advisedly because, man, it means being persistent in doing, moving in a certain direction and doing what's right. So look at what Paul says in chapter 2 here, verse 3. We have previously suffered, been insulted in Philippi, as you know, but with the help of our God, we dared to tell you his gospel in spite of strong opposition. First of all, he says, we weren't a failure. Let me tell you how. First of all, we got hurt in Philippi. If you're taking notes, note Acts 16. That's where we show you what happened in Philippi. But guys, he was brutally beaten. He was put in stocks. He was falsely accused, illegally punished. He was disgraced. There was public humiliation. It was bad. So what do they do when they get to Thessalonica? Do Paul and Silas say, you know what? One of them turn to the other and say, you know what? Let's lie low for a while because ministry is tough. No, they don't. What does it say? They dared to tell the gospel. They were persistent in the ministry God had specifically for them. My point is simply that these guys didn't quit when it got hard. And when I say hard for Paul, I'm talking hard. It wasn't just a little inconvenience. It wasn't just a little misunderstanding. It wasn't just a little lack of appreciation. It was, I'm physically in stocks being beaten, okay? Now, notice how they were able to persevere. It says that they dared to keep ministering, quote, with the help of our God. Literally, the Greek text means with the boldness of our God, meaning that Paul trusted, hey, God, I'm going to keep going, and I'm needing your help to do it, and I trust you to give that help. So what we're talking about is not human strength. Paul never advised you to rest in your own strength. Look what it says in Ephesians. Be strong in the Lord. Be strong in the strength of His might. So Paul is not talking about human strength as if he could just sort of psych himself up and walk around going, I'm bad, bring it on, like some cage fighter, you know, kind of beating his head against the cage before he goes into battle. No, this isn't about human strength. It's about psyching yourself up. This is probably Paul going, you know what, Lord, I feel inadequate right now. I feel overwhelmed with what you've asked me to do, and yet, Lord, I'm coming to you for strength. I pray that, Lord, you'd infuse me with your strength so that I could dare to preach the gospel. So I think probably Paul often turned to God for what he needed, understanding his own weakness, understanding that he couldn't do it on his own. Now, guys, think about your life. What opposition do you encounter in ministry? And let's face it, guys, well, let's just think of it this way. What is it that when this happens, you want to give up in serving people and doing what God's asking you to do in service? What happens that when this happens, man, you're going, I'm just going to quit, okay? Well, think about it. For you, what is it? I think one of the issues that often people encounter and that makes them want to give up is just criticism. Friends, when you minister to people, people are people, okay? Some of them are not mature. Some of them are very mature. So, you know, some of them will build you up, some of them will tear you down. But it's particularly galling sometimes to be doing something to help someone, and you're giving your time to minister, and having someone who should be thanking you criticizing you, correct? It happens sometimes. Almost 20 years ago, when we first started Lighthouse, I was preaching. A guy came up to me and said, you know, Art, I'm going to leave the church because, Art, your preaching isn't tough enough. You know, I need to get beat up once in a while, he told me. I'm going, I'm not beating people up enough. But finally I got perspective about it. I thought, no, that's what he needs right now. Doesn't mean I'm failing, okay? Maybe you've experienced someone criticizing your ministry, not constructively, but destructively, okay? Hey, you're not meeting my needs, or this isn't happening correctly. Friends, I want you to know a little secret. In ministry, it's the people that you help the most who will be the most critical. Why? Because the people you're helping the most are the most needy. And when they're the most needy, that probably means most needy psychologically, spiritually, physically, all different ways. So often, their resources to help you and to be positive about you are pretty low, okay? So we need to understand that. Now, if you're not finding God's help at those moments, man, you're going to be out of here. You're going to say, well, fine. If they don't like me here, fine, I'm out of here. Just forget this place. You know, there's an old joke among pastors. You should know this. You know, every profession has its dark humor, right? That includes pastors, okay? What do pastors say to each other? They say this, man, ministry would be so great if it wasn't for the people, okay? So, that happens sometimes. So since Paul, here's what I would say. Since Paul endured beatings and dared to keep going, do you think you and I can avoid failure by just being gracious in the midst of a little pain? I think we can. There are many other things in which we feel opposed in ministry. Sometimes our own fatigue, wants to drag us down. Maybe we're feeling lack of support. Maybe we're feeling misunderstood. Maybe we don't see immediate results. Maybe we think, well, I think I was doing this group and I thought 50 people were going to show up, but only 4 showed up, you know. And we center on numbers or whatever. And so we get discouraged by it. Paul says, no, man, don't quit. No way, man. The way you know that you're not a failure in ministry is that you dare to do what needs to be done with the help of your God. And you endure pain if it means it. So if Paul could endure beatings, could you and I endure a little misunderstanding? Could we? If Paul endured public humiliation, could you and I endure the pain of not being thanked properly? Could we do that? I think we can, because we can endure and do what God tells us to do. Now remember, Satan wants to put that neon sign in front of you, failure, 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 failure. No, Paul's saying, I'll tell you why you aren't a failure. Let's look at God's list. First of all, you're just somebody who sticks with ministry. But number two, he says, you're also successful when you have one motive, and that is to please God. Look what he says in verse 3 and verses following. For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so to speak, not to please men, but to please God who tests our hearts. We never came with words of flattery, as you know, or pretext for greed. God is witness. Nor do we seek glory from people, whether you or from others. You are our witness how we live holy, righteous, and blameless lives, and our conduct was holy and righteous and blameless. Guys, what's Paul saying? We're not trying to please men. We're trying to please God. One of the huge dangers in ministry, man, is that you look primarily to people's approval rather than God's approval. We want people to look at us and go, wow, you're so great. Oh, man, we want the accolades sometimes. We want the support. And guys, nothing wrong. In fact, we should be encouraging one another in ministry that way. But I want you to know something. Instead of looking for that, we've got to come back over and over again and say, what will be pleasing to God? It's one of the reasons in our new constitution that we revised, one of the things we said, okay, let's redefine what the job of a leadership team is. What's the job of the pastoral team? Here it is. To find out what pleases God and do that. That's our job. And it's now in the Constitution. That's our job. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't want to listen to the congregation. It doesn't mean we don't want to be responsive to the congregation. It just means, man, if we have 1,000 people saying, you ought to do this, it's all different directions. Instead, we've got to say, what's pleasing to God? Do you know, classical composers in centuries gone by often wrote their music with one person in mind. You know who that was? The king. Why? Because the king was their benefactor, okay? If he liked what was happening, then what they were doing was validated. So the composer wrote essentially for an audience of one. And if the king stood at the end of that performance and clapped, man, you were golden, okay? And friends, here's what I want you to know. We too minister for an audience of one. We believers must look for the applause of heaven. Now, of course, because we love each other, we give each other a lot of accolades. We want to support one another. But what are we primarily looking for? The applause of heaven. Because after all, when Christ returns, we won't stand before other men and women, brothers and sisters, for validation or reward. We'll stand before God. God is the one, it says here, who entrusts us with ministry. Look what it says. See how he phrases this? It's like we're commissioned for ministry. He's told us every person is a minister in Ephesians 4. So God is the one who puts ministry in our heart, our service. And in fact, it even says here that God tests our heart, means he scrutinizes our motives. And because he's commissioned us, he's given us the job of service. So our responsibility, what, is to please him. If you're in the one of our services, you know, you're in a certain platoon or a certain unit, you don't look to somebody else to tell you what to do. No, there's a commander for that unit. Same thing here with God's people. We don't look to other people, we look to God. Now look what Paul says. Here's the reason you know I was trying to please God. First of all, I spoke the truth, he says. You see that in verse 3. He said that there was no attempt to deceive. Why is that so important? Because, guys, if you're trying to please people, you'll often withhold truth. Why? Because truth is uncomfortable. Would you agree? If you tell the truth, somebody is going to be offended sometime. And as a result of that, if we're not trying to please God, we'll often withhold that which is best for people, the truth. And it's pleasing to God. And in fact, Paul tells his protege, Timothy, what does he say in 2 Timothy? Hold on to the pattern of wholesome teaching you learned from me, a pattern shaped by the faith and love that you have in Christ. And through the power of the Holy Spirit, which lies within us, carefully guard the precious truth that has been entrusted to you. God's word, God's gospel is that precious truth, and God's made us a steward of it. So first of all, man, you tell the truth. You speak the truth. And then secondly, Paul, he not only spoke the truth, he lived the truth, meaning his life was consistent with his words. Now, see that word impurity in this passage? It says we were not impure. That word, if you look it up in the New Testament, Greek New Testament, you see that word is often used for sexual impurity. And what he was saying is, listen, false teachers are used to coming in here, charlatans who come in and kind of make some converts, and then they say, oh, by the way, in our religion, to please our little God, you have to have sex with me. You know, I mean, that's the kind of ugliness that was going on in the first century. Paul said, no, you never saw any of that in my life. None of it. And he talks about other things, flattery and greed and other things. But guys, what he's really saying is, I wanted my life to match up to the truth. Guys, as we please God, we're working at both speaking the truth and living the truth. That's the way to be most effective in ministry. People, guys, do you understand that people will usually forgive you if you make a mistake? You know what? We have gracious brothers and sisters. And so if you admit you've made a mistake, if you admit that you're flawed, people will forgive you. But in general, if your life doesn't match up to your words, guess what? Your ministry will not be successful. It's even if what you say is the truth, man, because of your life, you're discounting the truth. Effective ministry is a combination of both character and activity. And in general, the more mature you become, the greater levels of ministry you can attain to. So, guys, it's great to have a bubbly personality. Okay, that's great. It's great to be very kind with people or be willing to give your time. But if you're not striving to live a pure life, man, your ministry is going to be curtailed. In fact, guys, I'm going to let you know something as your pastor. This puts the fear of God in me. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I'm like, oh, hold it, God. I'm talking about the truth every weekend and all through the week too. And if my life doesn't measure up to the truth, Lord, I've just discounted. You've entrusted me to do this. And what I've done then is curtail the ministry that you've given me. So, guys, believe me, the fear of God is in me when I think about what's going on. And so you've got to know I'm a flawed individual, but I'm trying to do everything I can to follow God. Now, our motive is to please God. That's what we're interested in. Now, let's just be honest for one moment. When it comes to a motive, is it ever possible to be completely without mixed motives? I mean, usually we have some mixed motives, don't we? Isn't it true? For example, when we minister, we might minister because we like being with people, or we like expressing ourselves, or maybe we feel good when we help others. It's okay to have some mixed motives, but your main motive got to be to please God. And that's what's got always to be in the forefront of your mind. Now, here's Satan. Failure, 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 failure. That's how he's evaluating what you're doing. Maybe even other people are agreeing with him. Well, are you being consistent? Are you being persistent and going the direction God has for you? As you do that, is your main motive to please God? Are you always thinking about, okay, God, what's next for us? How do we move forward with this thing? Wow, Paul's saying, well, then you're successful. Now, that brings us to number 3. Success in ministry also means giving love and commitment and spiritual support to those you're serving. Now you say, well, that's a pretty wide-ranging deal. Well, we'll talk about it. Look what it says in verse 7. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear. For you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. I'm going to be honest. I think this is one of the toughest marks. Why? Because he's saying, I want you to be like a mother or father to their children. And guess what? Sometimes God's children aren't as pleasant as you'd like them to be. Okay? And so it's tougher to be a mother and father. It's tougher to do the qualities of a mother and father because people are messy. People are people. Even ministry team members sometimes can let you down. They can remind you why you never liked those group projects in school because you ended up doing them all the time, okay? Sometimes that's true too. But surprisingly, look what's on God's list for successful ministry. Here's what he says. I was like a nursing mother, and I was like a father with his children. Now, I've always found it interesting that in this passage, Paul says, hey, you want to be successful in ministry? As I defend my ministry, look what I did that I thought God said it was successful. Here it is. I was like a mom. I was like a dad. And then it's true, isn't it, that husbands and wives give different things. Moms and dad give different things to their children. Isn't that true? You know, when our kids were at home, Naomi was a lot more concerned about table etiquette than I was, okay? She didn't want loud burping to happen around the table, things like that, you know? When we would take our families out hiking, you know, I would encourage kids to jump over logs and do other unwise things, okay? Why? Because I was interested in those kids, you know, finding out what they could do. So moms and dads bring different things. And so let's look at the different things that he mentions from moms and dads here. Okay, if you're going to minister, I want you to be like a nursing mom. Look what he says. He first talks about gentleness in verse 7. You were gentle among you, like a nursing mom taking care of her children. Could there be any better picture of gentleness than that? I'm not sure there could. Can't you just see a nursing mom cooing to her little baby, you know, tenderly taking care of her needs? Listen, what happens if the baby makes a mess or erps all over her? What does she do? Did she somehow lose it? No, she might be, you know, going, oh, no, I got to clean up the vomit, you know, well, whatever it is. But she's still going to be tender and gentle with that baby. So that's the first issue. We are called, get this, to be gentle with the people we're called to serve. Not only serve, but serve with. Wow. Then secondly, he says, along with that gentleness, I want to show something I'm just calling committed love because it incorporates a lot of things. Look what he says, being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel, but our very lives. You'd become very dear to us. And yes, it's saying we had affection, but it wasn't just affection. It wasn't just warmth. It was somehow I was willing to share my life with you. I was committed to you. In other words, I was behind you. This wasn't just a job. I'm going to say, I'm behind you. I'm committed to you in love. Now, it's unrealistic to suppose that we're going to have warm fuzzies for every person we're trying to serve in ministry. I'm not telling you to do that. But what I am saying is, look at the committed love here. I was behind you. And these qualities are important, guys, because people that we're going to serve are not perfect, okay? Some of them will be wounded. Some of them will be have hurt. Some of them will be imperfect. And we better know how to stay committed to people in the midst of their pain. And by the way, people in general are not going to receive your ministry until they know that you are for them, right? If you're just a number, if they're just a number to you or something like that, they're not going to receive that. And finally, here's Paul. He uses one more thing. He talks about the image of a father giving appropriate spiritual encouragement. He says, for you know, like a father, we exhorted, we encouraged, and we charged you to live in a manner worthy of God. All three of those words are important. All three of them. First, the word exhorting, it's a Greek word, parakaleo, and it means literally to call alongside. So a father would be there he would come alongside and he would think about your own children. When your children are having trouble in life or they're needing direction, you're coming alongside them, trying to give them perspective. What if something bad happens in one of your children's lives? You're going to be there to say, honey, let's talk about this. What's going on? Now let's try to see it from God's perspective. You would help them in that way. So you're exhorting them in that way. Also, the other word is encourage, and it means to comfort, to console. Would a father comfort and console? No doubt about it. Because our kids struggle sometimes. Our kids are going to be discouraged. And you think about your own children. You've come alongside them to encourage and strengthen their lives. And finally, it says that this father charges. Charge means to implore. It means you're going to have to tell the truth to somebody who needs it. Sometimes in your ministry, you're going to have to charge somebody to live in a manner worthy of God. You're going to have to say, man, you're traveling in the wrong direction. You need to do an about face. You're going to have to do that in service and love to people. You're going to have to charge them to do what's right. Hebrews 10 says it. Let us consider how to stir one another up. Okay? Friends, if you haven't been at Lighthouse very long, all these words mean this. We're going to encourage you. We're going to be committed to you. We're going to stand behind you because we know you're in process, but we're not going to shy away from sometimes charging you. Does that make sense? And by the way, we would do the same thing among each other. Pastoral staff, we're going to encourage, strengthen, but we'll also charge one another. Believe me, that's true. Because every one of us knows that we need to be charged sometimes. And so that's what happens in the church. Another way of saying it is this way. If you're new today, you need to know this. At Lighthouse, we're going to accept you just like you are, but we're not going to leave you there. Okay? And what we mean by that are these three words. Encourage, exhort, but also to charge. It really reminds me, I was thinking about this week, it reminds me of what happened to Naomi and I last August. Every August, we go to Paradise, and we climb up to Panoramic Point, because it's just, we want to see the wildflowers. It's just so great there in August. This August, we went to Paradise and saw something that we had never seen before. Snow. In August. And we could, I mean, literally, there was not a trail up to Panoramic Point, the usual trail at least. And so fortunately, we had something that helped us. We had trekking poles. And so when you get trekking poles, that assists you to stay upright. If you're going to slip somewhere, you know, you can help yourself. And it assisted us to go up, and we made it to Panoramic Point. There were some people, man, who didn't have trekking poles. They never went very far in those kind of environments. And the reason I bring that up is because I think in our spiritual lives, sometimes our ministry, we're like trekking poles in people's lives. We gently have committed love, but we help them stay upright on their journey. If they're about ready to fall, man, we're their support. This is what God's calling us to in ministry. And if you're doing this, if you're showing committed love, gently moving with people, helping them to move forward, man, you have the applause of heaven. This is God's list. God's question would be, are you demonstrating committed love to the people God has called you? Are you giving them what they need? Even tough words sometimes, tough love when they need it. Now, there's one last item, and we have just about 3 minutes to talk about it. But there's one last item. That's just a willingness to work hard in pursuit of a clear goal. Now, the whole passage really implies this, I believe. But look at what it says in verse 9. For you remember, brothers, our toil, our labor. We work night and day that we may not be a burden to you while we proclaim to you the gospel of God. Now, these words are pretty important. Labor emphasizes just how hard the job was. And toil talks about the struggle that was actually involved in doing that hard job. And then the goal was crystal clear, the proclamation of the gospel. So what he's saying is, man, we struggled hard. We worked hard in a certain direction. We weren't haphazard. We were doing something very clear, and we were willing to work hard to get it done. Now, guys, I'm not trying to turn you all into workaholics, by the way. I'm not trying to do that, because I know that these guys were traveling evangelists. They were not married. And all of us have different seasons in our life. We have more time or less time. If you're a family member, if you're a family person, then of course your family is a priority. But having said that, I want to say this. I am so impressed with so many of you who have who've defined a ministry goal, man, and now you're moving forward in that ministry goal. You're working hard. Maybe you've been a part of some team here at Lighthouse or teams. You have a goal, and you say, man, we're working hard toward that goal. Many of you do not shy away from giving up some of your discretionary time. You don't shy away from tackling difficult ministry job. And guys, it's true that hard effort in a specific direction is what's needed. It's not just activity. It's directed activity. It's activity that moves the ball down the field. And Paul says here, you know, we had a clear goal. We worked hard to get the goal done. Friends, God's idea and our idea of success is totally different sometimes. We succumb to Satan's neon sign, failure, failure, failure. But God has a list. And Paul used it to defend his own ministry, and by doing so, he's helped us to understand what God says is most important. So when Satan comes and tries to speak to you, man, you have a list, okay? Maybe you've been that person who's just persistently trying to please God. You're moving in a direction. You're persistently trying to say, Lord, I've come to support and love people, and I'm going to do it gently. I'm going to do it in your way. Maybe you're that person who has been persistent. Let's remember that if there are 73 people lined up to judge your ministry, there is only one evaluation that is important. Now, I'm not saying we don't listen to people. I'm just saying the most important evaluation is this, God's. Guess what? One day, I look out in this congregation, one day, I just see so many people I know are ministering for God. One day, what's going to happen? Our King is going to stand. The applause of heaven will come. I want you to experience that applause even now by knowing this is what I'm doing right now. So let's pray. Ask the Lord to help us. Father, I want so much for your people to be encouraged today. I pray you'd help every person who's active and serving in some way, in some ministry, that you've got them involved and toiling in some way, Lord, that they would even today feel the applause of heaven, to know that by your list, they're making a difference. But I also pray, Father, for those here who need to be challenged. People, because they're doing their own thing. They're not thinking about people. They're not thinking about service or ministry. Holy Spirit, would you motivate them? Would you move in their hearts in some way? Now, believers, keep praying, and as you're praying, take stock. Ask yourself, how am I doing when I compare myself to God's list? Some of you, you know what some of you need to do? Please. Would some of you do this? Some of you need to look at this list and then just receive the applause of heaven today. That's what you need to do. Just visualize God in heaven. Just, you've got his applause. But others of you might say, you know what? Man, I've kind of given up because I got hurt. Somebody didn't thank me, or I haven't persisted in ministry. Or maybe you haven't focused, you haven't worked hard, or maybe you're finding yourself getting cynical about people. That's so easy to do, where you get cynical and you're not gentle anymore, you're not thoughtful, you don't have what it takes to really get in their lives. So would you ask the Lord what you need today? Maybe you receive his applause, but also, God, what do you want from me?
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.